Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We're in the Quicken Loan Studios in New York. National mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Also, CBS's Super Bowl season continues Sunday with an exciting doubleheader. First, Tom Brady and the Pats travel south to take on Mariota and the Titans. Then it's a NFC West showdown between the Seahawks and Rams at the Coliseum in Lipstick City. The action kicks off with the NFL today, presented by Jeep at 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific, only on CBS. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4CBS, brought to you by Geico. Hey, everybody, here's a quick way you can save some money. Switch to Geico. If you need homeowners, renters, motorcycle, even boat insurance, they got it all at geico.com. Douglas Farmer covers the Irish for NBC Sports. Huge story today about Ian Book. He's not going to go against Florida State. I guess it's a rib injury. Douglas, thanks for coming on the bench. What's the status of Book? When did all this happen?
Well, the status per Brian Kelly is day-to-day, but that really sounds like the coach speak we're all used to. The injury itself happened in the first quarter against Northwestern, which makes it all the more impressive that Book toughed it out and got Notre Dame that win, including his 23-yard touchdown run in the fourth quarter. But apparently he's been real limited in practice this week, and he's out for at least this week, despite Kelly saying it's only day-to-day.
So Wimbush goes back in, and we all saw what he was capable of, both the good and the bad. How do you feel about him taking over this football game? Now, we know that Florida State has been anemic at best. They haven't been able to stop anybody. They've been getting lit up. It's got to give him some kind of confidence, but the kid still has to go out and do it, and a lot of people doubt him now.
Well, they may doubt him, but like you said, if there's a week for him to come back and play, it's this one. Florida State is not good. Even if their defense has shown some moments of respectability, the offense is not going to score on Notre Dame. Wimbush probably needs to put together two, maybe only three touchdown drives, and he's good to go. And at that point, it'll be kind of a nice redemption story. It'll be, you're right, people doubt him. He might have been booed this weekend if not for this absolute necessity. And so now he has a chance at getting a much-needed victory to keep Notre Dame in the playoff conversation. It will be interesting to see how he responds to that opportunity, a real moment to make or break his Notre Dame legacy.
When you saw him, you know, lose the gig to Book, and you're around the team a lot, how did the kid handle it?
He has handled it as well as anybody could ever expect, especially for a 22-year-old. Brian Kelly, he's had some missteps in this area before. 2016, part of that team's disaster was two quarterbacks who divided the locker room. And in this case, Kelly's been able to navigate it appropriately. And that's largely because Brandon Wimbush has handled this well, handled it maturely. According to Kelly, at halftime, when they're trying to figure out what's going wrong with the offense, it's Wimbush that is talking to Book and walking him through coverages that maybe Book hasn't seen before. And so that you really do need to give the 22-year-old credit in all those regards.
So Douglas Farmer covers Notre Dame for NBC Sports. Let's talk about the reality of their situation. Because in South Bend, I know I used to go to every game in my childhood. I saw Montana play every game he ever played at Notre Dame. And I was lucky enough to be around for all of that. And it was crazy. So I know that when they see, this is the same thing when Lou Holtz was there. When they see the finish line, and there's a light at the end of the tunnel with, if they can handle their business, they're going to be in something very big, as you know, this playoff. They have to win these games. When you see them now, they have to know how they can taste it. How serious are they taking these games that they need to finish the deal and get into that playoff if they want to be the Irish that everybody expects, a championship team?
There was a day when Notre Dame would kind of take the situation for granted. Like you said, the Montana days, the Holtz days, it got to be assumed Notre Dame would put together these situations and handle them well. But in the last 4 or 5 years, it has not been the case for Notre Dame. So this team is really looking at this very seriously, does not want to overlook anybody. Even if Florida State is 4-5, going to miss a bowl game for the first time in nearly 4 decades, Notre Dame knows some of the talent on that team. And Notre Dame remembers Miami last year and Stanford in 2015. It's not going to overlook anybody because it's been close the last couple of seasons and had nothing to show for it.
You know, Douglas, Syracuse had Clemson in Death Valley by the throat, and then they had some backup Bryce march him down the field and burn him at the last second. But, I mean, Syracuse has proven that they can score. They got a good quarterback, Dungy. They have a lot going for them. Is that game a worry for you? I know you got to worry about Florida State, but let's get real here for a minute. Is that the game that worries you and not the USC game?
Absolutely. It's and it would be so fitting for Notre Dame to move a game to Yankee Stadium and have that be the game that ends a national championship possible run. That is the team that is worrisome. Dino Babers has shown time and time again these last few seasons that he's going to have Syracuse ready when somebody like Notre Dame is around. If there is somebody who can pull this off, I don't think it's Florida State. It'd be a shock if it's USC. But Syracuse, quite frankly, it would be an upset. But they're a top 15 team. It's not like it would come out of nowhere.
When you go to the game at the Coliseum in Los Angeles, have you ever thought about not coming back home because it's so nice when you're out there that you just thought maybe
I call it my favorite week of the year because I'll go out Wednesday or Thursday and get a few extra days out there.
Right.
You better guess. I'm reluctant to get on that flight back.
Is there anything worse? Because, like, I grew up in Valparaiso, Indiana, and then I lived in Pittsburgh my whole life. So that's what I refer to in Portuguese as gray. So all I know is that when I went out to L.A. for the first time ever, I stayed for 12 years. I started surfing, smoking weed, the whole deal. I didn't know whether I was coming or going, chicks in bikinis. And then I'm sitting here trenching around South Bend with, you know, snow boots on, freezing my ass off at a, you know, November football game with my dad. I mean, it's freezing there. So when you go out there, you can see how they could lose a game like that. It's just all the palm trees and the women. I mean, it's just horrible.
It's a special life. I had the privilege of interning with the LA Times a few years back, and it was tough to get myself back to the Midwest.
As a fan
of Notre Dame, you have to remember, they pulled it off in 2012. The final game of the year was at USC, and they went out there, and they focused well enough to pull off that win. And if there's ever a week to be distracted, it's when you're 11-0 and suddenly, unexpectedly, the number one team in the country.
Do you think that they could actually go to that playoff and do damage to either one of those teams, Alabama or Clemson? Because I'm not smart enough tonight on whatever, November 8th to figure out which one they're playing. But if they make it, do you think you could beat either one of them?
I'm not supposed to say no, but no. I have a friend texting me earlier tonight with, here's the outlandish situation in which Notre Dame could win the national championship, and it involves this Big Ten upset, this Big 12 upset, and Central Florida beating Alabama, and my only response was, you're wrong. Clemson's defensive line would embarrass Notre Dame. Notre Dame is in better shape than it's been in years, but Clemson and Alabama have truly separated from the pack.
Yeah, they have. So you had mentioned before, like, the way the coach speaks stuff is, and in, you know, Spanish, I thought I recognized that conversation as that Brian Kelly is somewhat painful to deal with. As a reporter and as a journalist and a guy that loves sports like you, what's he like to cover? Is it painful or is it smooth?
I wouldn't say that at all. It's what I was referring to. He wouldn't rule out Ian Book. It's every coach in America at this point won't commit to a starting quarterback if they have any way to leave wiggle room. It's they like to think it gives the opposition something more to think about. But Willie Taggart and Florida State know by now that Brandon Wimbush is starting, and that when Kelly says it's day-to-day, it's just semantics. Brian Kelly has actually become quite casual in his interactions with the media the last couple of seasons. It's been a real, real nice change of pace in that respect. He's never been off-putting or difficult to work with, but he's a head coach at Notre Dame. He's got to keep in mind certain things. But the last few seasons, he's gotten comfortable in the position entirely, and it's kind of a unique thing to see from a Notre Dame head football coach.
Does he love that gig? I mean, there's been talk of him, you know, over the years, whether he would go to the NFL. I don't think he should ever leave that job if he doesn't have to. You know what I mean?
Well, the last two seasons make it seem like he might not have to. 2 years ago, you thought he was on the hot seat, and there were people taking out billboard ads and newspaper ads to get him fired. But 2 years in a row now, they're going to win 10-plus games, you know, assuming they can win one of the next three. And he's really changed things there. It would be a shock to see somebody who, 57 or 58, head to the NFL at that age, the NFL coaches are starting to skew younger, even if a little bit slowly. Kelly's got a good thing at Notre Dame. He's in his ninth season right now. Another couple, his contract extends through 2021. Another couple, and maybe he's done his run. And it would be an impressive run just because Notre Dame coaches don't last a decade.
Do you think that he's
Lou Holtz and Brian Kelly, apparently.
Do you think that he's one of the best coaches Notre Dame's had? Where do you put him in the sleeve of coaches that they've had? A lot of good ones.
You know, a colleague of mine recently described Lou Holtz as the last statue. As I'm sure you remember, Notre Dame has statues of all the coaches who won national titles around the football stadium. And the list will forever run just those five: Rockne, Leahy, Parsegian, Devine, Holtz. It'll forever be those five unless somebody wins a title. So Brian Kelly might be number six, but number six doesn't matter at Notre Dame until you win a national championship.
So I got how I got to do all those Notre Dame games was my dad was good friends with Devine, and that's how I knew him, because of his days in Columbia, Missouri. So my dad was like,
oh, really?
Yeah, that's where they got him. They plucked him from, and then he had been at Missouri and whatever, and that's how my dad knew him and whatever. And then the next thing I knew, I had, literally four for every Notre Dame game that he ever played. I even went to that Cotton Bowl in 79. I was a huge Notre Dame fan as a kid, and Joe Montana, I mean, can you imagine? Like, I watched that guy play from college, his first day there, literally through the NFL. Like, it's like watching, it was like people talk about Brady now. It was that's how they talked about him back then, because he was the man. When the Niners got rid of him, it was like the end of the world. It was like when Gretzky left the Oilers and went to the Kings in that trade. It was one of those shocking moments when Joe Montana left. I've done this on NFL Network as well. Like, I don't think they make him like that anymore, Montana. I mean, can you imagine, like, watching that, seeing that guy from Notre Dame all the way to the end? You saw it. You see what happens.
I can only hardly imagine. It's as far as college goes, yes, I've seen it a few times. Brady Quinn, Jimmy Clausen, both had their good runs, but neither one obviously was able to stretch it out in the NFL. And it really is, at this point, the Bradys and the Rodgers and the Mannings, and that's about it. They don't exist anymore.
So do you love covering them?
I enjoy the perks of the gig, but I think you know well enough every job has its pros and cons. I haven't slept more than 4 hours in 10 weeks, and that weekend in L.A. is looking better and better.
Listen, go to the beach, man, and take care of yourself there. I'm a little worried about you, Douglas, but great stuff on the Irish tonight. Let's see how Wimbush does. This is a huge test for him, and hopefully Book will get back for the last two, which that Syracuse game at Yankee Stadium is going to be enormous. Hopefully he'll be ready for that. We'll catch up with you and see how they fare the rest of the way. Thanks for coming on the bench.
Thanks for having me. Take it easy.
All right, Douglas Farmer, who wants to be on a beach in Southern California right now desperately. He hasn't slept in weeks. These things happen all the time on the show. Carver High averages about 3 hours a night. I sleep 3 hours a night, but then I'll sleep 2.5, 3 hours in a day. I got to have a siesta in the day. Otherwise, I'll fall asleep driving home with Mafia, or I'll get in a fist fight somewhere.
You're listening to Pharrell on the Bench.
I mean, how about the Pittsburgh Steelers tonight just putting a beating on the Carolina Panthers? 52-21 was the final. Roethlisberger, 328 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, they just lit them up. It was, 31-14 at the half? And then they kept scoring. They scored 14 more in the third, 7 in the fourth. And Roethlisberger, 22-25. What a game. 5 TDs. And I don't know. I think he was sacked one time in the game. And then Connor ended up with 65 yards rushing. And then in terms of receiving, he had 8 yards. So he really didn't have a big game, Connor. So, I mean, it was unbelievable. Everyone got in on it. Anyway, just everyone was scoring. Brown was scoring. They were all doing it. Their defense, I mean, they were all over Cam Newton all night. It's unbelievable. 855-212-4227 is the number to get on the bench. So you saw this college football game tonight in Raleigh that NC State was having their senior night, and things didn't go well, Mafia.
They looked like seniors at the end, like senior citizens. I mean, they just let Wake Forest completely come back and beat them, and they had a messed up field goal earlier in the game, I think, that cost them, and then Wake Forest came down and scored big with 30 seconds left to put them up by 4 points, and they get the upside. I mean, they were, what, 19-point underdogs in this game, and they come back and beat them?
Yeah, I could tell they were in the game. They had a lot going for them. A couple things I noticed in the game, obviously, were they were pounding the ball, and they were just moving it quickly. So they were doing no huddle, and they just had a pace about them, and they just kept coming at NC State. And I noticed earlier in the game that Finley, the much-hyped quarterback for NC State, was really having trouble hooking up with his receivers early in the game. Like, he was throwing out patterns to the sideline, and it wasn't clicking.
Especially in that last drive, there was one that they went for it on fourth down instead of trying to kick the field goal there to put it away. And he completely missed his guy. It was like a fourth and two, and they're throwing out routes and just threw it right over the guy's head on the out route. I don't know why they didn't. I guess because of the problems kicking the field goal earlier, they didn't try to ice it with that on the long field goal. Instead, they tried to get the fourth down and just completely end it, and it really cost them.
Well, there you go. So a big second half for Wake. I think we're trying to get the coach on the show from Raleigh right now. Let's talk to Mike in South Carolina in the interim.
Hey, Scott, how you doing,
What's
man?
What's going on, Mike?
Everything's good. Hey, Scott, big game Saturday night. Can the Georgia Bulldogs will win over Auburn?
I think, obviously, Mike, that Georgia can beat anybody they want. I mean, the bottom line is they're tough. You know what they're doing, and you've seen what they've done the last couple of weeks. I mean, they kicked, you know, Florida's ass, and that was no problem. And then they went to Lexington, right, and everybody thought, including myself, that Kentucky was going to give them a game. I had Georgia winning that game, but I had Kentucky in the spread, and they got their ass beat. I mean, Georgia's just playing really good football, if you ask me. And I thought Auburn got lucky last week. You know, Stidham marched them down the field. I'll give you that. That was nice. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I thought, you know, the other team blew it. Bottom line, they should have never let it happen. And then Auburn stole the game late. So I don't even think, because people are talking about should they bring back Malzahn and everything else. He's got a fat $50 million deal. They're going to bring him back, and they've already said they're going to bring him back, but that was a huge win for them to steal that win last week. And then if they're going to take on Georgia, they're going to have to play a lot better than they did last week, if you ask me. Georgia's playing good again. They had one bad misstep. That was it, and they lost. And everybody thinks when you lose that your season goes down the drain. But we all know now that a lot of these teams, when it comes down to it, by the time they make the playoff selections, a lot of them have one loss. So I think they're certainly capable of being alive and having a shot at the playoffs still if they can handle their business. Now, I know that it opened at 14.5, but the bottom line is I thought the Aggies blew the game. Dave Clawson is the coach of Wake Forest. Huge win for him tonight in Raleigh against NC State. Coach, thanks for coming on CBS Sports Radio. What did you think of Jamie? I thought he was incredible for you in his first start.
He played really well. I mean, he managed the game well. He didn't throw any picks. And we stayed in this thing till the end, and we gave ourselves a chance to win it. And, you know, what a two-minute fourth-quarter drive to lead us to a game-winning touchdown.
No doubt. I thought, you know, I was watching the game, and I just thought a couple of things I noticed about it, like in the first half, that you guys kind of frustrated Finley early. He was missing his receivers on the outside. And then when you guys had the ball, you were pounding the running game, and you were getting big yards, 7-8 yards a pop, and just going straight at him. And then I just thought that your timing, you know, you don't huddle, and you guys just call the play, and you start moving at a pace. I think it caused problems for NC State.
Well, it certainly worked out at the end. I mean, NC State is an excellent football team, and they're extremely well coached. And, you know, we played clean. We didn't, you know, we had the one turnover on the punt. But other than that, we played a very clean game. And like I said, our thought going into it is just get to the fourth quarter in a one-score game and give ourselves a chance to win it. And we did exactly that. And it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to actually do it. And our kids did just a fabulous job of executing in the clutch.
Well, I think you. This is a huge win for you. They talk about the Deacons hadn't beaten a nationally ranked team at home, you know, since like 08, but you win in Raleigh, a place you haven't won like one time in 16 trips, not under you, but it's just been a struggle. This is huge for you. It's obvious that you're showing signs of everything starting to work for your football team, and they're playing good football, and you're doing a good job down in Winston-Salem.
Well, thanks. I mean, this was a big win. Again, you know, NC State is probably one of the toughest places in the conference to play, that they have a great home support and a great crowd that's loud, and it's a tough place for anybody to play. And, again, for us to go through what we've been through this year, we have 13, 14 season-ending injuries and start a new quarterback, and just for our kids to come together and find a way, I'm just so incredibly proud of them.
What did you think when they had the ball at your 20-yard line there late in the game?
Well, we had to get a stop. And really, this game came down to two critical plays, and that was our ability to get off the field on fourth and three, which we did, and then the ability to come back and score with 30 seconds left. And I mean, I was really proud of our defense tonight. This is one of the best offenses in the conference, if not the country. And, you know, we made stops when we had to.
I know you guys are stoked. It was a huge win and a great job, a team bonding moment. You guys were going crazy. Now you go home and you take on Pitt, who, surprisingly, if you ask me, leads the Coastal. That Coastal is chaotic with all these teams being almost the same. That'll be a huge game for you guys in Winston-Salem. Hopefully you'll pack the place and it'll be rocking.
Well, I hope so. I mean, we really need to get our home crowd behind us. And now, you know, all these games when you win become more meaningful. And we're looking forward to get back to our home crowd and our senior day. But we get a couple of extra days rest because playing on Thursday night. So we need the rest. We need to heal up. And we'll be back at it a week from Saturday.
I like the way you coach. I enjoyed watching you tonight, working the refs early in the game. And then I thought you did a hell of a job with this kid at quarterback. And it's great that you're on national television applying your trade and doing so well. A huge win for you. Congratulations, and good luck against Pitt. And have a great Thanksgiving later this month, and have a great rest of the season. Keep doing a great job, Dave Clawson.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. We appreciate it.
There he is, Dave Clawson, the head coach at Wake Forest.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to Pharrell on the Bench.
I guess Ricardo should have stayed at the game. Carver High, what happened with the Celtics that were down 30?
Yeah, they won in overtime by 7. So good effort by the Suns in the second half.
I think that
nice job.
Harrow should have stayed at the game.
They probably won because he left.
Well, it was an epic game. It ended up being one for the ages.
What a boring game, he said when he came on.
Glad I got out of there.
Glad I left.
Back at the hotel suite. Getting ready to go golfing in the morning. TPC.
What a life.
Scottsdale.
It must be nice.
But they got it done. Your boy Kyrie, Uncle Drew, 39, 7, and 6 dimes. Hello. What a comeback. And I thought I'd tell you, the Bucks are leading the Warriors, who seldom come out to play at Oracle, 64-51 at the half. Greek Freak with 19, 7, and 3 dimes. Klay Thompson with 15, 2, and 1. Steal for the Warriors, who seldom come out to play. Blazers 81-77 on the Clippers. 3.5 left in the third. I'm excited about all of this. Thunder 98-80 all over the Rockets. Did you see what he said about Melo, the performance he had tonight? I mean, he's been lighting it up lately, to be honest with you. But tonight he had 2 points. He was 1 of 11 shooting. 1 of 11 shooting. I mean, you got to be kidding me. So previously, listen, his last 10 games, he's averaging 14-7. He's averaging 17-7 in November. He's averaging 15 points in their wins and 14 in their losses. And tonight he had, in 20 minutes, 2 points, 5 boards. And, I mean, that is just pathetic. Think about it. I mean, seriously, he's averaging even 14-7 a game, and he had two. That's just a terrible game. And wasn't that against the team he played? Against Oak City, of all things. Can you imagine? But let's see what happens in this Bucks game. Do you think they'll are you going to get a little in-game action going, Carver High, with the Bucks up on the Warriors 64-51?
No shot.
So the Bucks have no shot.
Oh, the Warriors are going to win the game.
Warriors are going to win, no questions asked.
No questions asked.
Mafia, are you down on a little in-game action with your boy Giannis?
I already had the pregame action, so I can't get on in-game now in here. I took the Warriors to win it.
You took the Warriors just to win outright?
No, I took them covering, what was it, like 5?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what the number was. I know I got, I thought I got 7.
It might have been lower by game time. It was closer to game time when I took it.
All right. Let's go to Kevin in Maryland. You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Pharrell, I'm on the same thing as Mavi. I looked at that number at 5, and I'm thinking, man, that 5 is like the lowest line you're going to get. And let me tell you, this Bucks team is for real. I got the over win total with Milwaukee. I just want to go through a couple football college games. I actually work for Maryland. It's a bowl game this week for them. They're going to Indiana. Indiana cannot stop the run. I believe Maryland can win that game. They can win that game.
Listen, Maryland, I thought last week in their football game, that was the end of the line. Michigan State spanked them, and this is after all of that drama, all of the court, all of the Durkin, all of the media, all the national attention, all of the parents saying the family of McNair, which deservedly they said it was like getting kicked in the teeth, spit in the face, punched in the stomach, all the rest. And then they went out and laid an egg. I think they're, believe it or not, I think their season's shot. I think they'll lose that game in Bloomington.
New Orleans, beginning of the year. Now, this week, I have a trend pick here. The Cincinnati Bengals versus the NFC is 10-0 against the number. That's crazy. I don't think they can beat them, but that's something that makes me take a double take. And I like Seattle this week. They gave the Rams trouble. I don't think they're going to win, but I think it's going to be a game. What do you think?
I like that cover. I'm with you on that. And then as far as the Bengals go, 10-0 against the NFC, that is crazy. I'll give you that. But I got to say that I just don't see, really, if you ask me, on paper, do you really believe that they're going to stop Drew Brees all day from scoring?
No. Not at all.
Yeah, so I think they'll cover the 4.
Think they're going to do with the kid Smith from Central Florida, that Dez Bryanson? Are they going to go 4 wide? What do you think? How are they going to do that with Dez and then Smith? And you got like 9 guys.
I think they're going to Drew Brees is going to take advantage of Thomas and Dez in the hands that they have, those capable hands. I mean, those are 2 guys that can kill you against anybody. Now we got to see what Dez Bryant looks like. Here's a guy that's done one of these. You know, he hasn't played. He hasn't done anything. He's been working out, training, running routes, I'm sure, and this and that. And, you know, there's been a million guys do that, and then they come out, and then they it takes them a while to really get in game mode where they're making plays. And, you know, it's a little different, I thought, with Amari Cooper going in a trade and just picking up and scoring a touchdown for the Cowboys than a guy that hasn't played in half the season and hasn't played since – you know, Dallas let him go. So, I'm not sure if he's going to be lighting it up yet. Maybe he will. Who knows? But a tough road game in a tough environment in the jungle, he may not even play him. I'd be shocked if he didn't play, but there's been talk that he may not play. I didn't get him in a deal. I didn't sign him to a deal to not play him. You know what I mean? I don't understand that thinking, but we'll see. But eventually, let's say in a game or two, which is when it really starts to matter, when they get to about, week 14, so 14, 15, 16, and 17, the last month, right? Those are the biggest games, and they want to stay healthy, and they want to go into the postseason and have a bye and all the rest, win the division. So I think that's when they're going to utilize him more. I think that's when he'll take his game to another level, and I think that's why he signed with them. He signed with them for 2 reasons. 1, Drew Brees, and 2, he's going to be playing in the postseason deep. He knows it. So he can be a rock star again. So his role will lead to him being a hot commodity if he performs at a high level, right? So his goal was to hook up with them and perform at a high level and have a marketing plan in place based off of these half a season of games. If he can produce, he's going to ride his ticket to a new deal somewhere, right? Wouldn't you think? I mean, Carver High, do you think that this will be a one-time rental in New Orleans? Or do you think he does well enough to stick, or does he go somewhere else and cut a different deal?
I think that if he plays really well over the throughout the course of the rest of the season and he finishes it out and there's money to be made on the long-term side, whether it's from the Saints or somebody else, I think he would go for it. I think he will take whatever the best long-term deal is that he can get.
There you go.
So I think he would leave.
Mavi, what do you think he'll do? You think he'll stay there, do well there, and have to stay there, or go somewhere else?
Whoever's going to pay him is where he's going to go. We already saw that for him. It's about the money, because we had deals up for him earlier. Before the season even started, there were teams that were interested in him, teams that were offering him, you know, some money, whether it be the Browns or, I don't know, I don't think he ever got a deal from the Ravens, but still there were teams that were interested in him that were offering probably the vet minimum, and he wasn't having it. He thought he deserved more. He thought he was going to wait it out.
I think he deserves more than the vet minimum. Thank you very much.
Well, we hadn't seen much from the last years with all the injuries, so now he had to prove himself. This is where he's going to do it now, and if he gets some big deal, doesn't matter where it is, he's going to go for it.
How quickly people forget that this guy put up huge numbers pretty much in every year of his career, didn't he? I mean, bottom line, hasn't he been to the Pro Bowl like three times, something like that? The guy has performed at a high level, but nothing's ever good enough for anybody. Obviously, it's what have you done for me lately, and they forgot all about what he's accomplished. He has been a good receiver, and no one can really argue that. And it was the end of the line in Dallas. I think they got sick of all the drama. And we talked about this last night. He needs to change his style. I mean, now that he knows that he's finally gotten that expendable wake-up call, everybody's expendable, he got the wake-up call. He's never had anyone say no to him his whole life, right? He's been Shangri-La. Now somebody finally said, thanks, we're done with you. Wash your hands. Wap, see ya. Then you finally get a little humble pie reality check. Is that about right? And then now he knows he's got to, like, stick. He's got to do a gig and stick. And it's either that or he's finished. There's a lot of guys, like we heard the guy this week, EJ Manuel, right? He's begging to get back into the NFL. He'll beg anyone. He'll do anything. He'll clean your car to get a job, but he can't get one, right? It's over, because it's over. Your window shut. It's blown by. See ya. The train left the station. So I think that's really, I hate to say it, I think that's the neighborhood, the cul-de-sac that Dez Bryant's driving around in. Speaking of driving around, how about your boy Antonio Brown today driving around town in Pittsburgh, busting off a buck chip? Wasn't he popped doing 100?
He was, yes.
I got pulled over doing 40. In a 40. I didn't turn my signal on when I did that power move around that 95-year-old granny the other day, Mafia.
Apparently he was just getting revved up because, you know, he's even faster on the field blowing past guys in that Panthers defense. I mean, I've never seen a Ron Rivera defense look so bad.
Do you think he cares at all that he got popped doing 100? It didn't seem to bother him at all.
You think he can't afford the ticket? He's going to pay it off, be done with it. See you later.
There you go. Bye. If they catch you doing 100 enough, they put you in jail, don't they?
I believe they do.
It's reckless.
Reckless drive.
Right. You're at warp speed there. You're at, you know, is that what they call it? Is there another word for it when you're doing over 100? You're a liability. You're a danger, a menace to society. A menace to society. Can you imagine? Mafia, we saw a guy driving that way tonight.
We've seen people driving that way every night.
Did you see the guy pass me on the left at the bridge?
Yeah.
That was him. There was no reason for that.
Cut in through you, like thread the needle between you and another guy.
For no reason.
That was ending, then came down on the highway in the city and was flying in and out of people three lanes wide. It's ridiculous.
And then gives you a look like you're in his way.
Right. You're too slow. What are you doing?
I never engaged, Mafia. You're constantly blaming me for engaging. I didn't engage. I didn't even look at
him. You behaved yourself on that one.
Thank you. Very important that I maintain some level of confidence here, because I've been in a lot of scrapes, a lot of scraps and scrapes lately. It's unbelievable. Get on VerrellOnTheBench.com. Football every night. Tomorrow you got Fresno and Boise State, Syracuse and Louisville. Saturday, Ohio State, Michigan State, Florida State, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Bedlam. Sunday, Saints, Bengals, you heard it. VerrellOnTheBench.com has everything. NBA, college hoops, NHL, boxing, MMA, daily fantasy. Sign up today, PharrellOnTheBench.com. Don't forget my sports betting show, Pharrell on the Bets, on Westwood One and WestwoodOnePodcast.com. Drops every Tuesday through Sunday, six shows a week. Tomorrow, episode 64, I believe. I think that's pretty accurate. Number 64 tomorrow.
How about that?
Can you believe that? So check it out at On The Bets, WWO, and subscribe free. And it's on iTunes, Google Play, everywhere that podcasts are available. Check it out. It's Pharrell On The Bets. So what do we have here? Where are we at? We're at halftime at a Warriors game. That's the last thing left except for this Blazers. They're up 7 on the Clippers. But there was hockey that I had noticed.
Kings and the Wild play tonight out west.
And I saw it was 1-1 in the second. It's still 1-1 with 11 minutes left. Canucks beat the Bruins 8-5. They've been impressive. Their 10th win. Panthers over the Oilers 4-1. Only their 4th win. Flyers in overtime beat the Coyotes. Canadians lose to the Sabres in overtime 6-5. And
Isles lost down in Tampa.
Vegas wins in Ottawa 5-3. Islanders lose 4-2. They had that game tied. How'd they blow it? I got 10 seconds.
Tampa scored with about a minute 20 left.
Canes 4-3 over the Blackhawks in Chicago. And the Stars beat the Sharks 4-3 in Dallas. Halfway home, we're going to the Billy Idol Hour of Love. Go with us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.